All right, time for Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy. Hi, Stacy.
Max Kaiser, we're in the Big Apple, beaming straight in to the big smoke.
Yeah, well, I had a lesson in global macroeconomics this morning when I went out to get coffee at 7 o'clock in the morning. The Italian shop was closed. The Chinese shop was open. That'll give you an idea of what's going on in the global economy. The Chinese are up and at them, first thing at the crack of dawn, cranking it out, making bucks. The Italians are lollygagging.
Well, don't we need a combination of both? I mean, there is a certain quality that is good to, you know, the slow food movement, for example, emerged from Italy. The pace of life is a lot slower, which can be frustrating when you go to Italy and for 4 hours they're off at lunch and you can't buy any petrol or something like that. But, you know, don't you think we need a combination of the two?
At the moment, we have a global economy dominated by central banks who favor the $2 an hour Chinese, who are getting up to make their $2 an hour as a matter of survival. In Italy, they're living in the welfare state of 100 years ago, and they're waiting for more welfare. And, okay, there's been several generations that have become accustomed to welfare, and they don't understand why the welfare isn't coming. They don't understand yet that we've gone into a new Chinese-style slave labor, slave wage. Same thing in Ireland. The big story, and I just read this, well, you sent me from the Telegraph, the EU troika rule in Ireland, worse than British Empire. Ireland trade union chief has accused the EU IMF troika in charge of the Irish austerity policies of tipping the economy into a downward spiral and acting as an imperial oppressor. Now, what we've been saying all along about the situation in Ireland is that it's not about austerity policies so much or about welfare policies or about tweaking the economy. It's about putting the people into an oppressed position once more under the boot of central bankers. And for that reason, when you say, oh, is that your phone?
Oh, that's my alarm. You can keep talking.
Okay. For that reason, people say that they lost their economic sovereignty. You know, that was the catchphrase when you go to Ireland. Oh, we've lost our economic sovereignty. And I kept saying, well, if you've lost your economic sovereignty, you've lost your sovereignty. The fact that they got the Irish people to believe that there was two different things, like, well, we've temporarily lost our economic sovereignty and we're going to get it back. No, you lost your sovereignty full stop. It's like if you put somebody in prison for life and then you say, oh, I've temporarily lost my freedom. No, you're in prison for life. The Irish economy, the sovereignty of Ireland has been sold. It's just the same thing with Greece. The sovereignty in Greece has been sold. Now, in Europe, what's happening at the moment that is really interesting? Well, first of all, in Britain, of course, they are beginning to wake up to a bad situation. But I guess the bigger story at the moment is France, because France is now entering, or the contagion of this economic spiral downward is now really hitting France, right? You read something today about France and the rest of Europe, Stacy.
Yeah, I was looking at Business Insider going over the European numbers, and the unemployment is spiraling up. Spain, I think that it was like 26.9% now, like across the board, not just, that's not just the youth unemployment. The youth unemployment is over 50%. But in France, the unemployment is starting to spiral up as well. And you see the consumer is really retracting, they say. You know, so car sales, some French brands, they're down 19%, but they're down over 5% with all the car manufacturers there. You know, and we were just in Paris for 4 or 5 days. And it's interesting, this sort of global financial collapse that we're seeing, because unlike the first Great Depression, there is a lot of money printing going on, and the government, the central banks are flooding the world with this freshly printed money. But you definitely see in London, New York, and Paris, where all three of them we've been in the last 5 or 6 days, there's no sign of Great Depression, because they're getting the flood of money. And another thing different from the first Great Depression is there's a high amount of mobility for the very wealthy and their capital. So, you know, whether it's Russian oligarchs or Saudi royal families or Middle Eastern oil billionaires or Europeans trying to hide their money or Chinese. There's a lot of flow of wealthy people into those cities.
Right. Well, the 1930s depression and the current depression are exactly the same in that there's no velocity of money. The difference is that in this current depression, there's a lot of money printing. And that's going into the pockets and the bonds of the people who suffered during the first depression. Just like they learned from the savings and loan how to change the laws to make it easier to do another savings and loan crisis from the 80s instead of trying to do something that would avoid that. Same thing in the 30s, the 1930s. They realized in the 1930s that when you speculate and an economy collapses, the thing you do is to print money. But you don't want to print money in a way that reflates the entire economy. You just want to reflate your own economy and avoid paying any kind of legal costs or being thrown in jail, as over 1,000 bankers were after the Depression and the scandals of the 20s, which led to the Depression in the 30s. So the similarity is no money velocity. But what's different is that within the top one-tenth of 1%, there is a lot of money velocity, but just for them.
Well, but that's something we've noted right before the Great Depression and then now is, you know, when the likes of Tony Blair says he saw no problem with inequality. He doesn't bemoan the rich getting richer. But there is a problem with money velocity because, you know, some guy is now, a lot of the billionaires during this Great Depression have actually doubled their wealth. I know my cousin works for a billionaire who was worth $7 billion before the crisis. He's now worth $15 billion. But he's not spending any more money. There is no increase. He doesn't consume more just because he's worth twice as much. If somebody went from $50,000 a year income to $100,000, I guarantee you they would be spending more money. But to go from $7 billion to $15 billion, you don't end up spending more money because you have, by that point, all the stuff you need.
Right. Well, the key period is 2008 and 2009. So in 2008, you had a global collapse. They printed lots of money. And also, as we now know from the records, Hank Paulson and Timothy Geithner, who was the Fed, who was the Treasury Secretary at that time, communicated to bankers that they were going to bail out the big so-called too big to fail banks in non-public information. And so billionaires, as you mentioned, who had $7 billion, it's not hard for them to double and triple or quadruple their billions because the big bank stocks like Citibank, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and on the international markets, a similar situation, they all doubled, tripled, quadrupled in price. Now, the average person was being told that the world was coming to an end and they should not get buy stocks. They should prepare for doom. Whereas the insiders were told, as we now know from the records, from the Treasury Secretary of the United States and from the regulators and from the big bankers themselves that they were going to bail themselves out and these stocks were going to triple. And as I've said on the show before, I've never seen a two-year period in history in my 30 years of observing markets where it was so easy for insider traders to double, triple, and quadruple their money.
Yeah. But again, you know, you see at the bottom that article you were referring to about Ireland right now being worse than the under British rule. And there was a sentence that some remarkable statements in there that it's like the worst ever in history for Irish recorded history in terms of the collapse of what's actually going on there. But this is, again, this inequality, the money velocity is not circulating. Money is not circulating because, you know, like the state workers in Ireland across the board, whether doctors, teachers, policemen have already taken up to a 14% cut, and now they're being asked to take another up to almost 10% cut in pay. But like I said, if a guy was worth $7 billion before and $15 billion now, he's not going to buy, you know, double the amount of flowers for his properties compared to the previous week. But somebody doubling their pay on the lower end of the income scale, say below $1 million, is going to noticeably spend more.
Right. There's no velocity. The money velocity is dead because even though people have gone from $7 billion to $15 billion in the course of a year, there's no money velocity. That extra $7 billion is not moving in the economy. It's just sitting there. So it's no velocity. So if there's no velocity, you still have a depression, because the way to avoid a depression is you need velocity of money. Money has to circulate, but that's not happening. Now, again, in the story, it says that the Irish, not in 800 years of British rule, have they suffered in a similar way. And that brings back another theme, which is that the point of this is not, you know, the insidious nature of this too big to fail, too big to jail banking crisis is they want to go back to pre-Enlightenment. They want to go back to the Middle Ages. They want to go back to feudalism. They want to create a neo-feudal times. Now, at the time when we talked about this 4 or 5 years ago, people said, well, that sounds a bit hyperbolic, you know, neo-feudalism. You know, they want to go back to lords and serfs. They want to go back to having 99% of the wealth concentrated in 1% of the ruling aristocrats and technocrats and banksters. That's a bit extreme. But in Ireland, this is what they're experiencing. In Europe now, this is what they're experiencing. In the UK, they're just entering the end of the beginning, we've seen. Now we're seeing the beginning of the middle. And the beginning of the middle will be the march toward a massive 30 to 40% devaluation of the British pound, and then we'll have the end of the middle and the beginning of the end. And the beginning of the end will be a new social order.
And, yeah, we're in a neo-feudal sort of system, and you see the serfs and peasants really behaving in a similar manner in that, but worse now, because back in the Middle Ages, you know, you would fight for your lord. But in exchange, the Lord took care of you. He fed you and he gave you housing. Now they don't even get that. But here in America especially, it's very extreme. You see, like, the weird, and they all claim to be very independent and free thinkers. But, you know, you see half of the population rallying behind certain billionaires like the Koch brothers. And then other ones rallying behind billionaires like Mark Zuckerberg or a billionaire like George Soros. And they really think, like, they point their finger at the other billionaire supporters, and those peasants are bad. We'll go fight for you, our lord. You know, it's a very bizarre sort of situation to observe from the outside.
Right. And again, going back to 2008, people now realize that the problem was banks too big to fail, not enough competition, not enough free market competition, not enough capitalism. You had too many monopolists. Okay, here we are 5 years later, just came out. JP Morgan is now the biggest bank in America, probably the biggest bank in the world. Through their mergers and acquisitions, they eliminated all the competition. They got rid of Lehman. They got rid of Bear Stearns. Now they're too big to fail, but much, much bigger, much more dangerous. And they're lauded as a success story. Well, I mean, if you know, the British monarchy came ashore and took over Washington, then the same people on CNBC would say, that is a fantastic success story. You see, the monarchs won. We have succeeded. I don't get it.
Yeah, and Jamie Dimon, of course, this week on, I guess, an investor call, was like bragging about, that's why I'm rich, because, you know, I'm smarter than you.
That's a classic let them eat cake, you know, sentence. I mean, that phrase, let them eat cake, people have talked about it for years and trying to understand the context that it was made and what it means. Well, this is what it means. It means you have a guy who has destroyed his economy because he's an insecure little twat, weenie waving out in public.
That's right. Well, I see, by the way, I see on your screen there, Kim.com. So it looks like he's actually close to extradition because he lost an important case in New Zealand appeals court, where they overturned an earlier decision preventing his extradition. Now this appeals court has overturned that decision and said that he can be extradited to the U.S. because extradition treaties, the judge ruled, are between government to government. They're not based on the law. You're not supposed to prove your guilt or innocence. So basically now they're setting precedents that you don't need any prima facie evidence to be extradited anybody. Just it's a government can decide whether they're friendly government, some political reasons they decide to hand over somebody to another government.
Yeah, just like the MPAA murdered Aaron Swartz, the MPAA and Chris Dodd decided they want Kim.com in prison because they don't want the competition, just like Jamie Dimon doesn't want the competition. So what's happening with Kim, I guess it goes to the Supreme Court of New Zealand. That's the next fight. And hopefully he'll win his fight and be able to, you know, successfully put down this MPAA, this dangerous, murderous lobbying group of thugs.
So we're in New York, and it's the Big Apple. There's now austerity happening here because this, I guess, the sequestration thing didn't happen. So basically the government is supposed to shut down unless there's some sort of last minute deal happening like today, because we're recording this on Friday due to the time difference. But they're supposed to shut down all sorts of services. This happened, of course. This always happens under Democratic administrations, of course, because the Republicans don't mind doing this in Congress. The Democrats would never do this because that's not their sort of style. They're allegedly better than all that.
Well, that happened under Clinton, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But Clinton was in the White House. That's the executive branch. The legislative branch is Congress and the Senate. That's controlled by the Republicans, the Congress. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So they're the ones that shut down the government today under Obama. And under Clinton, the Republicans also control the Congress, and they shut down the government. So this is a tactic they use. It worked. There was a huge backlash when Newt Gingrich did it under Clinton. It fell on them. They got the blame for it. But, we'll see, because, of course, other than New York City, where you're not going to see any evidence of the Great Depression out there in the real American world, you see the likes of the stories about Walmart suffering. They're struggling to sell anything. Their customer, because of the payroll tax increase that just happened in the last month, because of some shenanigans of them not agreeing politically, the Republicans versus Democrats. So now most Americans on an average income have $15 less a week to spend. And apparently, like I was saying earlier about money velocity, therefore that's hit Walmart's bottom line. Just an average American having $15 less per week to spend.
Yeah, well, it kind of makes sense, and it's kind of scary that their margins are the leverage. They're so big and so leveraged and so such a monstrosity that a 15 cut in the paycheck would totally destroy their sales revenues. And so, how do you recover from that? Because they can't reduce prices anymore. They've already pressured suppliers to the point where the suppliers are starving to death. They've already co-opted the municipalities across the country and gotten themselves into places with the real estate abatements and real estate deals and tax abatements, and they pay very little tax. They pay very little for produce. They pay very little in wages. So they have no way to cut prices anymore, and now people can't afford those things. So I think we're at an inflection point for Walmart, where the Walmart model, in order to survive, they're going to have to sell themselves a prison corps of America and turn all those outlets into prisons.
Well, it's at the end game of this neo-feudal, this notion that we were in somehow a globalized world where prices would always get cheaper and it was all good for the poor, and the poor were doing well and everybody was doing well, and all tides were being, the tide was lifting all boats. And yet, I think between this Walmart story and the horse meat scandal in Europe, I think you're really seeing that the poor are going to be forced to come to the realization that they're eating slop. They are peasants rolling around in slop. That's the truth of their situation. Their situation wasn't any better just because they continued paying only a dollar for their food year in, year out. The ingredients were actually becoming less and less real. And even I was reading on the flight over here that, apparently they're going to be new sort of regulations actually regulators are going to have to look at the food chain. And farmers were saying in the UK that they don't make any money right now on raising cattle, on raising beef cattle. So they can't absorb the cost of actually any further regulations. They'll just give up raising cattle because nobody has the money to buy it anyway at that end, unless it's like luxury, free range sort of cattle, which there people don't have any problem paying, whether it's 50 pounds a pound or 100, they don't care. But at the bottom, those people can't even afford it right now. The farmers are losing money selling it to Tesco, so they'd rather just give up and do something else.
Yeah, well, there was a horse meat and the beef story. Then we saw the water in Maker's Mark whiskey story.
Yeah.
Then there's water in Budweiser beer story. And then today, there's a story that tobacco firms save $1 billion by putting kitty litter in cigars. So a dozen tobacco companies have gained from a legal loophole that helped them avoid as much as $1.1 billion, their secret, using fillers such as kitty litter in their cigars. 22 companies producing small cigars. So this is yet more indication of what we would call stealth inflation. So the prices are the same. And, Alan Greenspan will say, there's no inflation. What inflation? There's no inflation. And all these kind of Congress people talking to him and questioning him and as part of his testimony, none of them bring up the stealth inflation, the watering down, the horse meat, the kitty litter in the cigars, the Procter & Gamble shrinking their portion sizes, Coca-Cola shrinking the portion sizes. All that stuff is inflationary. It's all shrinking or turning into crud, and the prices are the same. So, if they weren't putting kitty litter in the cigars and weren't putting horse meat in the beef burgers, the prices would be up 20, 30, 40%. And that would be obviously inflation. But it's stealth inflation. But none of these idiots questioning a Bernanke, like even Elizabeth Warren, I didn't hear her ask these questions. She's, as far as I know, her effect as a senator now has been an absolute zero.
Well, you get closer to the Haiti situation there. So they're putting kitty litter, the clay, into the cigarettes because there's a loophole about the certain weight of the actual product. If it weighs as much as a cigar, apparently they don't have to pay tax, excise tax. So they saved themselves over $1 billion in taxes by putting clay in there. But this is, of course, what they eat, the mud pies in Haiti. But the Haitians have had a long history of eating that particular mud, which is very mineral rich, and it's always been good for the skin and bones and, various other internal organs. But now a lot of people are just subsisting on that because the environment is destroyed. But here, we're getting closer and closer to that point of just eating clay and horse meat.
Right. And the money at the very tippity top also owns the media and the news. So they will tell you in no uncertain terms that you're eating filet mignon from the finest boucherie in Europe, even though it's green slop. Genetically modified cardboard with pig soot.
Well, I guess the best thing if we're heading into this neo-feudalism, and it doesn't look like there's any sort of will to stop it because people still have the hope that they're going to win the lottery, is really you should position yourself closest to the lords. Try to get in with them. The closer and more subservient you are to them, the more likely you are to get scraps of real beef thrown at you. Maybe you could eat the little bits left on the rind or the bone, and they'll kill you last before the other peasants.
Right. Yeah. So you have the court politics. People just trying to get close to the king, and you have this enormous court, and the court requires an enormous amount of funds, and then they go to war with each other. So the currency wars, of course, will become hot wars, become ground wars. I mean, you already have America's in 5 or 6 or 7 or 12 wars simultaneously, so they're already out there. And all that money that you got to buy tanks and drones and all that other stuff. So, and the people, and the richest zip code in America now is not in Los Angeles or San Francisco or New York. It's in Washington, D.C., where all the money is given to arms dealers. That's who makes the money, and that's where they flock. If you're getting out of college, kids, this year, go to Washington, D.C. and become affiliated with the arms dealing business if you want to survive. Otherwise, get in line at the soup kitchen.
Yeah, get close to a congressperson or senator. There's usually, they often have many mistresses and stuff like that, or what do you call a male mistress? Any if you get close to one of them and they could give you some kickbacks. But of course, if you read about like Henry VIII, there is also a danger of getting too close. So you don't actually want to be too close to them because they often kill their closest people as well.
That's what's good about court politics, is that there is some kind of deterrent for being too much of an ass licker. the king decides that he just wants to cut your face off.
That's right. Let me write that down. 2455. Yeah. So there is a randomness. There is a genuine unpredictability, like the markets were supposed to be. The free markets are supposed to be unpredictable. Now they're totally predictable. And that's what's led to this situation. They're predictable for a certain class of people. But once you put that class in where they could be unpredictably killed by the lords that they serve and they bow down before, then without any justice or recourse for them, they just, you know, the people at Henry VIII, he decided to kill them. They just, nobody stood in his way. He just killed them, took all their property, gave it to another sycophant. And then, the circus went on.
Yeah. And then you had, and of course, you had the Pope and you had the Vatican and then you had the kings and you had Europe. And then there was something called the Enlightenment. And the Enlightenment took money and power away from the popes and the kings and they put it in the hands of the people. But that's now being erased from history using basically this global banking system to recreate feudalism and to get it rid of. And anyway, the European economy is in a death spiral. So, Ireland is now going back to pre-enlightened feudal kind of colonial imperial oppression days, and it's sneaking into France, right? So France, I think that, I mean, this is obviously our friend in France, Pierre Jovanovic, who wrote this great new book on Blythe Masters, that's being translated into English now. He's saying that the conditions are right for revolution. And when you say revolution in France, you're referring to the 1789 revolution in which, you had a coup d'etat and the monarchs had their heads cut off during the Reign of Terror. This is what the French person is saying. And when a French person says this, I would tend to listen to them.
Yeah, we did a pre-recorded interview with Pierre Jovanovic when we were in Paris just yesterday, and he talked about, I don't have her name written down, but there was an attempted kidnapping of a French minister from the left, the party on the left. And the media hasn't really reported on it. Certainly not the international media, but even the French media hasn't really reported on it. They kept it quiet. But he's thinking that this is part of the collapse of the fabric of the society there. Now, Mitch Feierstein of PlanetPonzi.com, he was tweeting this morning about the European economy, the situation unfolding there, and he said that which country is going to leave first, and I proposed that it would be Italy, because Italy, of course, has a huge, they have more gold than Germany in terms of per capita, and more importantly, unlike Germany, they actually have it in their physical possession. They have 2,500 tons of gold in Italy itself. And they actually, unlike many of the other, like Spain or France or any of the other Portugal or other European countries, they actually still manufacture and export. They have a huge export market to China, which is their luxury. Nobody makes clothes better than Italy. Their clothing is top of the line. Their shoes, their handmade shoes, everything. Those things are in huge demand in places like China, and their food products.
Yeah, and they'll be making these things as the artisans did for the king back 400 or 500 years ago, but you'll have a few, they'll have a few craftsmen that work for the king making handmade things.
Yeah, but this is the land of Machiavelli. They do it very well. They will be the in a global neo-feudal system. They will perhaps perform well because they design the clothes that make the rich, the lords, look good. They have the good food, the best of food for the Lord.
That's what I just said. They will continue in their role as courtesan, artisanal servants to the king. It's not a scalable global model. That's the Chinese realize this, and they're not trying to put them out of business because they want to keep them as their artisanal craftsmen, to separate them from the other kings around the world. And as they jockey for position when they go to Ascot or some other events or the big car racing events. They want to be able to show off their handmade Italian shoes, and so they'll keep them alive.
So John Kerry or the new Secretary of State of the United States, has been traveling around the world. I don't think he's even stopped in the UK yet. But
that was his first stop.
Oh, was it?
Yep.
Oh, I barely even noticed
then
it.
Then he went to France.
Well, it got more news, certainly, in the U.S. press that he was in France, that he was he's now in Turkey. He's, you know, traveling around. He spoke French in France, which was big news. And the French loved it. That's all it took for them. They were all flustered that he spoke French. Finally, our lords and masters in the U.S. empire have spoken our language.
Oh, yeah. Nobody seems to get excited when I speak French over there.
Well, that's a whole different topic.
I don't know why. It's just because my accent maybe sounds a little mangled. You know, they always give me a hard time. Quand je peux parler le français, il me dit,
So looking at theguardian.co.uk today, I see David Bowie album stream. I haven't heard it, but I keep on seeing 5-star ratings. Like, it's a great album and it's an amazing album. That's all I've seen so far. But speaking of cultural stuff, the most bizarre political surrealism, I call it, is this bizarre stream of Americans, whether it's Eric Schmidt from Google or it's Dennis Rodman of former, you know, all-star basketball player traveling to North Korea. Dennis Rodman's hanging out with Kim Jong-un, getting drunk.
Right.
And tweeting about it, live tweeting while he's hanging out, getting drunk with Kim Jong-un. It is, what is going on? This is just like the most baffling, crazy. It's certainly, I guess, is a way to get 15 minutes of fame, because Kim Jong-un is this crazy dictator issuing bizarre threats, saying he's going to annihilate the U.S. Nobody pays attention. Nobody even cares about these threats. Setting off nuclear bomb tests. Nobody cares about that. Like, nobody pays him attention until some crazy Dennis Rodman goes over there.
It's totally unexpected. You can't really understand anything about it. You know, as we're saying before, ever since Kony 2012, the world's gone, it's spiraled into this fifth dimension and ninth dimension of incomprehensible nonsense. I don't understand any of it. But in this case, here you have this Kim Jong-un successor to Kim Jong-il, their nuclear power. He appears to be a paranoid, cult-leading psychopath. So, you know, paranoia breeds on itself. You know, you're isolated, and your isolation breeds your paranoia.
Yeah.
So here you have a Dennis Rodman, who's a freak from the National Basketball Association, part of the world champion Chicago Bulls, you know, era with Michael Jordan, and well-known, and certainly a cool guy, who's hanging out with this other guy. And I think is that it would work to lift the paranoia of the dictator, because it would lift this isolation thing going on, because the world is now saying that, you know, all these hipsters around the world are looking at this and saying, oh, that's cool. You know, Dennis Rodman's got these incredible tattoos. And he's a freaky guy. He lives in Florida and bangs all these waitresses. He's hanging out with this guy. How cool. It's like, you know, that puppet movie from the South Park people, Team America. So in a strange way, I believe that the nuclear threat from North Korea has been diminished.
Yeah, I think you may be right. And, you know, that isolation does breed paranoia and freakdom, because you look at much of the South and the Middle America, people don't travel, they don't have passports, they've often never been out of their local community. And yet in this globalized world where you can, the internet gives you a picture and a, you know, view of every single local community, you see the freakdom and the paranoia from these very isolated people and how crazy they are. I mean, you know, you see some forum boards with people who haven't been out of their local community and they only share their paranoia on some forum board. They sound as crazy as Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, you know, you get into these self-feeding loops, self-emphasizing of ideological loops. You see it in America with the right wing now. They seem to just want to get into the fights that they know they're going to lose. So now they're getting into the sequestration fight. They're going to lose this one. They got into the re-election, you know, heading into the election, they backed Romney. He had no chance of winning. The guy that had a chance to win was Ron Paul, but they couldn't back Ron Paul because he had a chance to win. And they're in a self-feeding, vicious cycle of doom. So you got to pick the loser, and you see that in America. You see that in countries around the world. You see it. It's common. It's very difficult to reach out and brace yourself against your own tendency to crash into self-feeding doom loops. But in this case, it may be the single greatest stroke for world peace since Mahatma Gandhi.
What, visiting?
Dennis Rodman is the Gandhi of the 21st century.
Well, I actually tweeted, I heard back from some North Korean propaganda person.
He doesn't get the Nobel Peace Prize. You know, they gave it to Obama, who starts like 10 wars. Dennis Rodman's working the global peace thing, man. Give him the Nobel Peace Prize.
So I tweeted, how on earth do you explain the odd parade of American celebs and tech dudes traveling to North Korea these days? Political surrealism? And I heard back from American in North Korea. He says, it's an interesting place. If you go to his site, it's his Twitter profile, it says, Master Marina, part-time North Korean guide with Young Pioneer Tours, photographer and creator of the American and North Korea blog. So I heard back from a propagandist for North Korea. Come, it is fun.
Wow. Well, I think for these people that are in the billionaire class, it's a way to brag to their other billionaire friends at the country club. Like, oh, I went to Martinique. I went to Barbados. I went to, Davos. These things are so played out that they need a new thrill. So to say, I visited a crazy dictator in North Korea, you immediately are the belle of the ball. You know, like, oh, wow, that's so cool. So it's just a way to differentiate, you know, what you're, it's a country club weenie waving.
Or perhaps Kim Jong-un is there. They're going there to look at his model because, of course, he's got a cult of millions of people who live in abject poverty and slave away for him all day. And if we're in a neo-feudal times, this could be them looking to import this model to their own state, perhaps in the U.S. or their own, you know, vast lands out in Montana or something like
that.
Yeah,
that's true. He has managed to, lord over millions of North Koreans who love him and adore him, who are in a cult. He's like the successful version of Jim Jones. He's not having people drink the Kool-Aid. They're not mass suicides. I mean, there are a lot of gulags and people do commit suicide, but, you know, we don't talk about those. Yeah, it could be that the Google chairman is there to try to transition Google from, you know, they're already in bed with the police state in a big way. They want to take the next step and just become outright crazy dictators.
Well, that's the future. See, you heard it here first on Resonance 104.4 FM in London, the Big Smoke, as it used to be known. We're coming to you from the Big Apple. Nobody really calls it the Big Apple, but the whole, like, the tourist industry, the little trinkets and stuff. Why was it called the Big Apple again?
It comes from the jazz days, I think in the 1950s. You know, the jazz guys were on tour around the country. They would refer to New York City as the Big Apple. And it just, you know, stuck. I think that's how it got started.
You know, I read a report one time in the last, like, year or two where they were saying a lot of new words are actually invented by the Black American community that become commonplace, but the origin is actually from the slang and jargon they come up with that then becomes mainstream.
Yeah, well, that's makes sense, you know, because under slave days you have to, and this is true for Polari, I think it's called, in the UK, an oppressed, the gay community would have to come up and invent their own language. And a lot of those words like dressing in drag, cross over and become mainstream. So the community and the slave community to communicate outside of, they want to keep it secret. You invent words and invent language and do things like that. So and the jazz musicians are being chased all the time by the cops and they're smoking dope. And so they come up with different words for that. And then it crosses over to mainstream. So I think it's a language of the oppressed.
Yeah, I wish I could remember it because I do remember them. I wish I could find the article because they talked about how fast it spreads as well. First amongst the black community, it'll go from Baltimore to Los Angeles to Chicago to, you know, New Orleans very rapidly. They all start
Oh,
using
and I
this word.
have black moguls, like that guy, Hippity Hip Hip, what's his name? P. Diddy. These guys are near billionaires and they control huge media networks. So when some poor ghetto kid starts talking about, I'm going to zip, zack, a zip, zap it a boop bop, suddenly that's a whole clothing line called Zippity Bip Bap. And, that's it becomes huge.
Well, Cockney was also code word. They used to have like the king's spies would be in the area, and they had to speak in tongue to avoid being
Right. There's
overheard.
another example of it. So those words cross over, some of those Cockney words, and they become mainstream.
Interesting. I think it's time to start coming up with that. None of us out here on the internet, none of us have our own code, or maybe we do. You know, like
Jibo.
4chan. 4chan is a great one because they come up with so many things that then become so mainstream, and everybody, even normal, you know, mom and pops are talking about, and they don't even know the
Yeah,
origin.
like something like you see this word more, MOAR, for more, MORE. So this is a meme.
Came out of
People using
4chan.
it. What does it mean? It's a combination apparently of more and roar. So it's like you want a lot more or more, MOAR. So it's a meme that starts usually on 4chan and then it crosses over. And they've crossed over lots of different memes like that. And that's sort of the it's a meme incubator.
Lol's cat, they started all the cats ruling the internet. Now everybody knows the cats rule the internet. That is the internet god. You know, when you talk about the holy dial tone, of course it's going to
Of
be meow.
course.
That's going to be the first signal when we all answer the phone globally at the same time. We're just going to hear
Oh,
meow.
well, I saw about the holy dial tone. There's a story about scientists have rigged together two rat brains, created a super brain. So that's clearly down the path now of the holy dial tone because all of the brains on the cell phones at one point will wake up as one brain and you have a complete evisceration of the ego and you have the global id and you'll start to see things in terms of your id and not your ego. So you look at your car and you'll think, that's a stupid thing. It just kills me. It creates things I don't want. It's not part of my community objective. So you don't get into your car anymore. It happens en masse. People look at cars like they look at a rabid snake. They're like, ugh. This will all happen simultaneously as a million Jesus Christs are born simultaneously with the holy dial tone.
You know, we were talking about neo-feudalism and the empire that is the United States. And, you know, looking through history, of course, it's at the end of empire is when, of course, because they're at the peak hubris and they have their monopolies, they're comfortable, they don't need to work, they don't need their own population. And it's always on the periphery, outside the empire, just outside the gates of the empire, where all sorts of interesting stuff is allowed to happen because they're not under the boot so much of the empire. And I read on the flight over that in Africa, 31% of all commerce happens via mobile phone text, you know, payments. Things that 31% is paid over just a mobile phone, not like a smartphone, but you know, how they have the mobile phones, they just text each other payments.
This is a huge wave, and it has to do with this huge global transition. And again, the economies of Africa are on the way up. They're going from eating mud to having $2 in electronic money in their pocket. So that's a huge percent gain. They're happy. Everyone in the West is going from having $50,000 average income in America to $10,000 and less. They're unhappy. They're sad.
Well, I mean, and you see that like with the Somali pirates, when they formed that stock exchange to raise money for their next ventures, it was exactly what was happening in Amsterdam in 1600 when they were raising money to go on their plunder missions. And it's interesting that I'm sure they didn't read about this in a book about how to set up a plunder exchange. It arose in their own minds as well, independently of what happened in 1600 in Amsterdam. And they've created this. It's also against the idea of copyright because obviously this group of humans down in Somalia came up with the same ideas because natural to the problem or their situation, this idea springs up.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, you know, Bitcoin is now at a new all-time high of 32 to the dollar. And there's news this past week of Bitcoin automatic teller machines.
Yeah.
So people can go in, they slide $50 into the machine, and it'll upload $50 worth of Bitcoin for you and or to your account. And so this is the proliferation of Bitcoin. Bitcoin, as we identified 3 years ago, is a huge phenomenon. And, you know, I continue to believe that this will continue down this path.
Yeah, and, you know, I must give ourselves a little pat on the back because go back and look at those early shows. Our first interview about Bitcoin was with John Matonis. So if you just go to YouTube, say Kaiser Report, John Matonis, J-O-N-M-A-T-O-N-I-S. And then all the subsequent Bitcoin episodes we did, we had so much hate and so much trolling about it. It was unbelievable. But now it's really starting to gather pace.
We were so far ahead of the curve, not even the shows that are ripping us off blind ripped us off on that one because it was just too far-reaching. Oh, my God, I just saw a news story that scares me. Man disappears into a sinkhole that opened under his bedroom. This is my biggest fear, is that a sinkhole is going to open up underneath me and just swallow me up. It's been a nightmare of mine for 53 years.
Well, it's very terrifying. I read this. It's just happened in Florida in the middle of the night. So the 36-year-old guy, you know, his he just disappeared down the sinkhole.
Look at that.
And the police and the rescue workers said it's too dangerous to go down there. They put, like, an audio listening device, and it got lost down there. So the brother of this guy was living in the house and tried to help him. He was, like, trying to pull him up, and he started to get dragged in. And the police...
Rescuers in Florida put engineering equipment into the sinkhole but failed to find, quote, anything compatible with life. That was impossible. He sunk down to the middle of the earth?
Maybe he's in China now. Maybe he's with Dennis Rodman in North Korea.
This is so post-Coney 2012. I just can't deal with it.
But what are all these sinkholes that keep on happening? Did they always happen in the past, or is this something new? Because, you know, we are depleting a lot of groundwater as we suck it up into our, you know, sewage and water system.
Probably it. It must be the depletion of the aquifers have structurally re-architected the crust of the earth, and now these sinkholes are opening up unexpectedly and just dragging people down into them. This is really nightmarish.
And it's always a perfect circle like that. What is that all about? That's again, you know, remember that big giant one that opened in, was it Chile?
Yeah.
That, like, it looks fake. It looks photoshopped.
Well, it's not an impact crater from the top. You know, it's being like there's a vacuum underneath that sucks the crust of the, oh my, I can't even talk about it. It's too scary.
Maybe it's, you know, this also coincides with the building of the Large Hadron Collider. Maybe they are causing little black holes that just...
Oh, nice. Now I'm never going to get any sleep. Thanks a lot. Totally warped my brain.
Well, it could be. Who knows? I think it would be kind of scary.
Let's see what's going on here. Consumers tap out as income plunges by most in 20 years. Savings rate crashes to 2007 levels. So apparently the consumer is tapped out.
Well, this is what I was saying earlier.
No velocity of money.
No velocity of money.
So no savings. However, the billionaires, as you point out, run from $7 billion to $15
billion. Yeah, but they're not able to spend it. They don't hire. They can't hire anymore. This, you know, the guy that my cousin works for, the $7 billion guy that went to $15
billion,
yeah. He's got a staff of like 100. You know, it's supposed to trickle down. And okay, it trickled down to 100 people, but he hasn't hired any more people. He hasn't bought any more homes, and he has a few private jets already.
By the way, listeners to this show who did what we said and buy gold and silver, their net worth's tripled because gold has tripled, or actually has quadrupled in the UK during the time we've done the show, since the crisis. So, I mean, this is the way the people, you don't have a billions, and you're not gaming the system. You know, we said that ultimately this will all come out in the price of gold and silver, and that's the way to play it if you just have a few bob to rub together. And so we've kept you current anyway. We've kept your net worth tripling and quadrupling along with the billionaires, and I hope you've been taking advantage of that with us.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily like tripling your wealth. It's just avoiding the decimation of your wealth. That what has happened is a siphoning off of the wealth of all the, in America, 300 million peasants. They've literally had it sucked out because it was so easily accessible to the financializers who were able to just take...
Financializers.
Yeah.
I never heard of them. They sound dangerous. Sounds like a good TV show. The Financializers. Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah, but through inflation and through wealth confiscation, outright wealth confiscation, whether it's MF Global taking customer funds or the pension funds, you know, evaporated in the markets, that's the siphoning of off of wealth. But when you have gold, it's like a grounding. It's like having, you know, grounding your home from lightning strikes.
You know, I am feeling, though, that the price of gold and silver, they've been going sideways for 18 months. And
now down.
You know, the price for 12 years has gone up every single year for 12 years. Mm-hmm. So to focus on the down days is to miss the big picture. Now, for the next 5 to 10 years, I think we're going to see pretty much the same thing. We're going to see annual gains, uninterrupted, and we're going to continue to reach our price objectives, $10,000 on gold, $500 on silver.
Mm. Yeah, well, of course, what's happening right now is that great, what do they call it, the reshuffling of assets and wealth. So because markets are near an all-time high and on very low volume, so it's just the insiders, what's happening is their, you know, the normal investor with still $20,000 to their name is repositioning their wealth portfolio.
Well, the big difference is that the stock market's up near an all-time high, and for every dollar in the stock market, 90 cents of it is debt, is leverage.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that average, normal Joe human being, the guy out in the street, has not participated in this market hitting all-time highs. What you do see from the volume is that insiders and big investors and too big to fails are moving out of the markets. They're selling their shares now while that normal Joe Bag of Donuts is going in. They're selling to Joe Bag of Donuts. And I'm sure Joe Bag of Donuts is selling his gold in order to buy those shares because they're being hit with relentless propaganda that the gold bull is over and the markets are hitting all-time highs. You got to get in there. So they're shifting their wealth from gold into, or from their 401ks or savings or cash, whatever they had, into the stock market where it'll promptly be lost in this next down wave. And, you know, the likes of Jamie Dimon are buying gold and silver.
Well, the insiders, and that's the legal insider sales, which is reported every month, are high, they're at historic highs. Mm-hmm. So the when insiders sell stock, they file with the regulatory agency, and that is recorded. And when insiders are selling, typically it marks market tops. And at the moment, insiders are heavy sellers.
Yeah. And who are they selling to?
Well, it ends up in the hands of people who are excited by the market hitting new all-time highs and have decided now for the first 4 or 5 years to start buying stocks again.
Well, that's the truth. So we'll see the next leg as we get closer to the North Korean model. Apparently, that's where we're all heading. Welcome to that. Make sure you scope the newspapers, look at the Financial Times and the Economist, check out your news headlines and find out which lore do you want to support.
Yeah,
we're open to having some peasants.
Well, yeah, I was going to say is that, okay, the stock market's bought by 90% leverage, but the gold market's bought with 90% cash, real mm-hmm. cash. So that's why when the market crashes, people who are on leverage are going to dump quickly and you see a big plunge. But if you bought cash for your gold, you're less likely to sell it and it'll hold up.
Physical gold.
That's right. That's right.
You know, a lot of people get very confused. See, what do you think, you know, in the last 5 minutes here about the two-part, the double-header interview with Professor Antal Fakheta. This is the first ever in 412 episodes that we did a double-header with a guest, and we could have easily done two more. But so he said that, you know, this goes back to Carl Mango, who said that it was the spread between buy and sell bid offers what was more important than the price. And therefore, this is what he said is the most important about the gold market is what the actual physical cash price is that you have to buy at a bullion dealer. and what the nearest term futures contract is. And that is telling you a lot about demand, supply, and more than what the price tells you. Whatever the price of gold is, it doesn't tell you as much as what the spread tells you.
That's his theory, you know, and because then it opens up the discussion about whether or not the market is in backwardation or contango, contango being the normal spread where the future prices are higher than the cash prices, but in backwardation it reversed so that the cash prices are higher than the future prices because there's so little trust in the market that people are unwilling to sell cash gold today, even though they can make a guaranteed profit in the arbitrage of selling the cash today, gold, and buying the future at the same time in an arbitrage and pocketing cash profit and while still holding gold. They're not. They're so distrust. There's so much distrust in the global central banks and commercial banks and around the world today that people are not even taking that free money deal because they don't want it for even 1 second to give up their physical gold.
And he was saying, you know, it's by design that all the media publishes the futures price. They don't publish the cash price. Even on Kitco.com, it's not publishing cash price. It's publishing futures price.
Well, according to him, it's not even that clear what is the cash price. According to Fachetta, I'll say, well, where do you get the cash price? I asked him that question. He said it's not that easy to find.
Yeah, because you have to call the actual dealers. You have to. It's not published anywhere. That number is not published anywhere.
Right, right. So it's all. It depends on what the last non-reported transaction between a buyer and seller was. That's the current cash price.
Yeah.
But that's not recorded anywhere. It's not. You don't see that quoted in the news. They quote the futures price, the paper price. That's the price that they quote.
Yeah, and there were some attempts. I remember early on, like 4 or 5 years ago, somebody was reporting the eBay price of gold. So that was like closer to the cash price because you're seeing actual transactions close live on a digital board.
Well, the only place you really see this is when you hear, for example, that the premium for coins is rising. Because right now, if you buy a Silver Eagle, you pay $2 or $3 above spot. That's the cash price. Sometimes you see stories saying that the premium for Silver Eagles is now $4 or $5 above spot. So that shows you backwardation. That shows you that people are willing to pay more for today than what the futures price is, the paper price. That's an example of what we're saying. And that's the only time you really see it quoted or talked about publicly is when the premium on the coins is rising. That is a clear indication of backwardation.
Well, with that, that's this episode of The Truth About Markets. On Resonance 104.4 FM, this is Max and Stacy in the Big Apple, New York City, coming to you beaming into London and around the world.
Okay, then. Bye, y'all.